the virtual stimulation. Thinking back to the language program, he tried to remember what he'd learned. Surprisingly, he discovered much of the information had stuck, and he started spouting Soren phrases out loud in the CIC. My name is Lucas. Where are you from? Do you have any water? How do you get to the spaceport? Death to Zala. The words coming out of his own mouth sounded bizarre, but he could at least process what he was saying. He wondered if the Sorens would be thrown off by his assuredly American adaptation of their language.
Impressive, Lucas heard from behind him.
Alpha was standing there, his spindly metal claw tapping on some controls.
Thank you.
Lucas reverted back to English. As after a few hours, he imagined he couldn't carry on an actual conversation in Soren yet.
Yeah, it's not too bad. The program is satisfactory?
Alpha asked. So far, though it's a little off-putting that I'm my own teacher.
I figured the voice most familiar to you would be the best option.
Lucas thought briefly that he might prefer having Asha's voice relay the lessons to him, but he kept the idea to himself.
Oh, Lucas remembered an earlier question.
We found a sealed box in the armory. All the other crates have been stripped, but this one is locked up tight. Do you know what it is?
Alpha shifted, then responded after a pause. No. I know the object of which you speak, but it is above my clearance to open. I have tried myself, but the mechanism is too secure.
And the room across from your lab? Alpha didn't look at Lucas when he answered.
Yes, the same security measure is in place there as well. It would be best to not tamper with it, as it could prove dangerous.
Something was odd about Alpha's tone, but Lucas didn't press the issue further. Noah says thanks for his new toy, by the way. Alpha looked surprised.
The child speaks now?
No, it's a figure of speech.
I see, said Alpha. It took a mere minute to build. It is pleasing to see him take to foreign technology rather than childish artificial animals and the like.
Every kid should have a stuffed animal or two. Alpha kept tapping on the console.
The norms of your world are no longer relevant. If the child is to survive, he will have to be strong from an exceptionally young age.
Lucas thought of Noah's likely permanent burns. Well, he's not off to a bad start. After another pair of workouts, a few more hours of Soren, and a game of fetch the hollow ball with the now fast-crawling Noah, Lucas was off to bed in the water chamber. He liked to read actual physical books before he attempted over a dozen hours of sleep. It was a nice reprieve from the constant flood of technology everywhere else on board. He'd polished off the Harry Potter series in a week and finally understood what all the fuss was about, though he was a bit miffed that Potter didn't end up with Hermione Granger in the end. Now he had started on The Picture of Dorian Gray and was wishing that he'd managed to find some cliff notes in the mansion library as well, as it was quite a bit more dense than a tale about wizard school. Thumbing through the pages to see how long until the current laborious chapter ended, he glanced up at the monitor, which showed a closed, glowing pod on the ground where he'd placed Noah a while earlier. He was about to look back down to his book, but did a double take as he saw Asha enter the room. She bent over Noah's pod briefly, but then stood up and began examining the others on the walls. What is she doing? Much to Lucas's surprise, she stepped inside one of the pods, and a halo descended onto her head as the door closed in front of her. Lucas was perplexed. She'd hated the machines, and had looked even more chilled than him each time she'd emerged from it. Why would she willingly go back to them now? The question bothered Lucas until he finally drifted off to sleep, where he had dreams he would barely remember. In one of the stranger moments, he found himself floating in empty space, a brilliant supernova erupting in front of him. A black, shimmering ship shot out of it and raced toward him. A voice could be heard from within, but it wasn't growling. Rather, it was speaking in broken Soren.
You do not belong.
Omicron's ship hung there in space with a supernova's light refracting off its hull.
Return to your...
The voice was growing fainter, a whisper.
Your dead world?
Lucas turned behind him and saw Earth. The all-encompassing cloud cover had dissipated, and only a husk remained.
a scorched red and brown planet without a hint of blue, white, or green. Against his will, Lucas began speeding toward it. He blasted through space at speeds he couldn't comprehend and surged toward the outline of North America. He fell to Oregon, to Portland, to the crater. Lucas woke up in a sweat, but the dream didn't stay with him for long the way pod memories did. After a fresh tube of nutrients and a vigorous workout, he'd forgotten all about it. What he did not forget was what he'd seen last night, and when he woke up, the monitor showed only Noah crawling around. The pod Asha had been in was empty. He confronted her about it in the armory, where she sat reading her old copy of Paradise Lost. "Yes, so what?" she said dismissively, not looking up from her book. "So I thought you hated those things." She casually turned a page. "I haven't been sleeping well, and those nutrient packs taste like ass. Despite its flaws, the pod gives you way more energy and the nutrients you need for practically the entire day." Her messy hair and eyes laden with dark circles didn't make it look like the pod had helped her recharge all that much. "Why do you care anyway?" she asked, finally glaring at him. "It just seemed odd, given what those things can do to us." "Mind your business," she shot back in Sorin. Lucas was momentarily caught off guard. "You spent some time with the program?" She put down her book and turned toward him, happy to be rid of the pods as a subject of conversation. "Yeah, and the turret yesterday." Her turret had all the same capabilities as Lucas's chair in terms of running simulations. He had seen a similar-looking one in Alpha's lab as well. "Did yours have you teaching yourself?" he asked. "Yeah, it's a little creepy." Lucas got up to leave, but stopped. "Oh yeah, I asked Alpha about the box. Claims it's above his security clearance. Same with that room outside his lab."
"And do you buy that?"
"Nope."
"Yeah, like the genius son of a super scientist doesn't have that clearance, or can't hack through it. He's hiding something."
"He's always hiding something," Lucas mused. "But we're still alive, so I'll let him have a secret or two."
As Asha left for her turret, Lucas headed upstairs for another day of Sorin lessons. This time he stayed in for almost 8 hours, and by the time he came out, even his thoughts were in Sorin for a solid 20 minutes after disconnect. He gave the alien fighter variant of the flight program a try and found it to be far more intense than his transport training. The smaller ship was capable of much higher speeds in close combat and was infinitely more maneuverable than his present craft. At first he died so often that he almost passed out from the amount of pain he was receiving as punishment, but slowly he began to correct his errors and managed to pass the first 4 stages by the skin of his teeth. His nerves needed a rest, and he closed down the simulation and brought up the various monitors linked to different parts of the ship. Alpha was in the water chamber, noting the various levels in the tanks on an electronic pad. The next view was of the armory, though only the front half of it, as Asha had smashed the second camera that showed the rear of the room where her quarters were. A fair attempt at some privacy, but Lucas hadn't bothered to do the same in the water chamber. Lucas was surprised to see Noah crawling around the storage cubes. Despite Asha's concession that the child should be saved, she didn't usually spend all that much time with him. Lucas saw him shaking an assault rifle magazine like a rattle, so perhaps that wasn't necessarily a bad thing. But at least she was taking an interest. That night, he watched her crawl into the pod again as Noah slept, and when he woke, she was gone. This pattern repeated itself for several nights, until one morning he awoke and found her pod door still shut. After his morning workout, he returned to the monitor and found the same scene, despite the fact that Noah had crawled out of his own pod an hour earlier and was busying himself with his colorful techno toys. Lucas went up to the barracks to investigate, but when he got there, found Asha stepping out of the pod looking exceptionally disoriented, breathing rapidly. She jumped when she saw him in the room.
"The hell are you doing here?" she asked angrily.
"I was about to ask you the same question," he replied. "This doesn't look like it agrees with you."
"Some nights are better than others," she said as she rubbed her bloodshot eyes.
Noah rolled his metal ball toward her foot, but she didn't even notice it. Instead, she turned and walked out of the room without another word. Lucas looked cautiously at the open pod next to him. He picked up Noah and headed to Alpha's lab.
I have an idea, Lucas said as he reached the laboratory a floor down. Alpha was working on some sort of device that Lucas couldn't decipher. It looked like a cross between a lamp and a dehumidifier.
And what is that? Alpha asked.
Lucas put Noah down on the table, and he immediately began crawling towards Alpha's project. In a few seconds, he pulled a piece of fragile machinery off. Alpha sighed and calmly used his good claw to slide the child a few feet away across the metal surface of the table. In the past few weeks, Noah had grown increasingly curious about Alpha and treated him the way a child on Earth might treat a Great Dane. Alpha had initially snapped and demanded the child be kept confined so as not to interfere with his work. But over time, he seemed to warm up to Noah and was becoming more tolerant of him by the day. Lucas continued.
If the chair speeds up neural functioning in Asha and me, would it do the same for him?
Noah was crawling back toward Alpha, but reacting swiftly, he shoved a blinking metal disc at the child. Noah was quickly enraptured by the glowing lights and progressed across the table no further.
The thought had not occurred to me, though I suppose it would be possible. The programs would have to be far less intensive, and he should only stay connected for a brief period of time.
Do you think it would make him speak and walk more quickly?
Speech, perhaps. Mobility is more a factor of muscle development, however, and it would likely have little effect.
Alpha was perhaps wondering if more mobility would be a good thing for the already fast-moving child. Lucas imagined it might compound the trouble he could get himself into.
It is indeed how we train our young, and as such, they develop cognitive reasoning and logic skills quite quickly. Human biology is not used to such technology, but perhaps if the child was trained in its use at a young age.
Alpha escorted Lucas to the bridge, happy to be out of his cramped lab. Lucas set Noah in the chair as Alpha tinkered with a Sorin language chip, which he'd plugged into his mechanical wrist. Noah squirmed in the chair, but calmed down when Lucas produced his hollow ball.
I've crafted a basic speech program that is below even the basic levels that you utilized. I have programmed in Asha's voice. Your scientific texts have shown children respond better to their mothers.
Lucas was a bit miffed, as the absent Asha wasn't even around to witness this, nor had she come up with the idea. In fact, over the past week, she'd barely paid any mind to Noah at all. She's no mother. The state she was in that morning indicated she could barely even take care of herself. Alpha finished his tweaks and the chip flew into the console. Cables attached themselves to Noah's head and he looked momentarily shocked. He began to show a little fear and was almost about to cry when suddenly the program lit up the space in front of him. He calmed down immediately and let out a large chuckle that made Lucas grin. The kid did love his holograms. Alpha monitored Noah's brain activity as Asha's voice guided him through basic Sorin words, like colors and numbers, which were universally recognized entities, it seemed. A discussion had taken place about whether or not to have him taught English, but Alpha maintained he could pick that up from them, and Sorin was the priority if he ever hoped to have a future should they survive this journey. After about a half hour of an Asha-voiced lesson full of bright colors and soothing sounds that seemed to hypnotize Noah, Alpha signaled Lucas to shut the chair down. As the display disappeared and the cable retracted from Noah's tiny head, he looked around confused, wondering where all the fun had gone. His mouth started moving, and Lucas and Alpha watched in anticipation. But no words came. That would have been too much of a miracle. Alpha checked some readouts.
His cognitive functioning is above average. Despite no external result, the session seems to have agreed with him. Repeat daily, and perhaps you will achieve what you seek.
Alpha sounded like a pediatrician prescribing ear infection medication.
All right, little man, playtime's over, Lucas said as he scooped Noah up off the chair.
Alpha returned to his lab, and Lucas took Noah back to the barracks, but not before he brushed past an irritated-looking Asha in the corridor. She didn't acknowledge their presence and looked equally as unkempt as she had when she stumbled out of the pod earlier. After dropping Noah off in his cobbled-together playpen, waiting briefly for him to say anything other than babbling nonsense, Lucas headed back up to the bridge. The promise of hours of virtual training stood before him, but he forced himself to do 100 push-ups before he plugged himself in. It was a constant struggle to stay in shape, confined in a relatively small vessel, and the chair required hours of motionlessness. As stimulating as it may be for the brain, it was in no way a physical workout. Lucas's chest burned during numbers 90 through 100, but he was impressed with how far he'd been able to come in a relatively short amount of time. He was able to run more wind sprints than ever and do double the amount of strength exercises he could a week ago. He collapsed onto the metal floor, then pulled himself up into the chair where the cables found his head. He was determined to figure out how to fly this damn virtual alien jet fighter, and he'd stay in all day until he could master it. And that he did, peeling himself off the chair 15 hours later. The vast majority of it had been spent in flight sim, and only a few were devoted to any further Soren instruction. He still had another 4 months and figured there was plenty of time as he was picking up a large amount of the strange tongue already. His body told him that he'd overdone it in the simulator and couldn't even muster up the strength for his nightly workout. He told himself he'd make it up by doing an extra one tomorrow. As he crawled into bed, the monitor showed Asha's now frequently used pod closed already, with Noah's unit also shut on the ground alongside it. He thumbed through about 5 pages of Dorian Gray before he passed out with a book on his chest. He was too exhausted to dream. What seemed like minutes later, he awoke and tiredly pulled his wrist over his head as he lay on his mattress. Alpha had built him a makeshift watch based on the 37-hour clock, which had proved to be essential since it was almost impossible to tell time any other way. The tunnel of space-time had no rising or setting sun, and his body's internal clock couldn't be trusted any longer. He glanced at the barracks monitor and saw that while Noah was crawling out of his pod, Asha once again remained in hers. He didn't feel the need to go extract her, as, despite him being a few years her senior, it wasn't his responsibility to regulate what she did on the ship. She was always quick to remind him of that fact. Lucas surprised himself by being able to complete a number of handstand push-ups leaning up against the wall. Despite a lack of solid food, the so-called nutrients really were boosting his physical prowess. After only a month, he reckoned he was in the best shape of his life. It was a strange feeling. He had been on the verge of death such a short while earlier, and he almost felt foreign in his own newly powerful body. Noah, too, was looking healthier than ever, and even Alpha seemed to have a new sort of shine to his usually dull gray skin. The only crew member who had looked worse for wear was Asha, as after a stint of regaining muscle, she had now wasted away. The pod seemed to be atrophying both her body and mind. Lucas found Alpha doing some work at the hollow table on the bridge. He was zooming through planets and star systems too quickly for Lucas to process. The speed of his gestures looked a touch panicked. "Everything all right?" Alpha looked up, startled. He quickly waved the images away, and a host of Zollan symbols appeared.
"Yes, yes, just working on some calculations. What are you doing up here?"
Lucas cocked his arm to hold up his watch. "Chair time." He strolled over to his usual seat, but turned to Alpha. "Do you think you could put any other languages on here?" he asked, holding the Soren chip out. Alpha was bemused.
"Other languages? For what purpose?"
"Yeah, Zollan for one. I know that I'm never going to speak it, but it might be nice to know what the hell everything says in this ship. The English translations are pretty rudimentary."
Alpha considered the request. "All right, I will work on something. Oh, also," Lucas added, "a virtual Norwegian dictionary would be nice too." "It is bizarre you would request to learn an extinct language," Alpha said, confused.
"Can you do it?"
Alpha threw up his claw in surrender. "Very well."
He shut down the hollow table completely.
"I must retire. There is much work to do. Do not overexert yourself with simulation."
Alpha started walking out the door. He spoke with his back still turned.
"You will not be needing to fly a fighter any time soon."
Lucas swore he heard a mechanical chuckle as the scientist left the room. Alpha's parting words got to him, and he spent most of the day diving headfirst into his Soren chip, determined to master the language faster than Asha. He wasn't sure if she was continuing her sessions in her present state. The tutorial was growing more and more grammatically complex, as were the attached geometric words, but his fast-firing brain appeared to be keeping up. The program began glitching a bit when he ran into words that had no direct English translation. Many had to do with technology, and with no clear picture of the objects or concepts in question, it was a bit hard to process. The use of water as a power source was discussed, as was the element that was employed to make the kinds of cores they'd been accumulating on Earth, but it didn't have a pronounceable name. The computer simply subbed in the term null for the synthetic element. From his readings about the Saurians, which Lucas brought up on screen beside his lesson, null cores of all shapes and sizes powered every bit of their technology, from household lighting to starships. The more powerful the core, the more transmuted water it needed, and the more refined the null element had to be, an expensive process. A null core's color indicated its power, and practically the entire rainbow spectrum was classified. Blue, which was what the Ark had used to get to Norway, was on the higher end, while white, their new power source taken from the mothership, wasn't listed at all. The null core was the technological breakthrough that the Saurians were determined to keep from Zala initially, but now both sides employed the technology that was driving the war into an eternal stalemate. But the Zalans had eventually developed cores more powerful than the Saurians, which had allowed them to travel further out in the galaxy and discover other inhabited planets like Earth. The Saurians didn't have a word for these types of supercores, and Lucas understood the significance of the glowing white object in their engine bay. It was a higher power variant above anything the Saurians ever manufactured. Lucas's head began to swim, attempting to process all the technology that was millennia past anything he should be able to comprehend. The program was a language tutorial, not a science class, and even with neural stimulation, he doubted he could even begin to process the concepts behind it all. Still, Lucas was learning a great deal, and his brain seemed to be less fatigued by the influx of information he was exposed to every day. It appeared the journey had allowed him to not only recuperate physically, but mentally as well. Out in the wild, he was lucky if he managed 2 hours' sleep without waking up in a panic after all the horrors he'd witnessed. Here, however, he was sleeping 15 uninterrupted hours at a time. After years of nothing but misery and despair, the ship felt like the closest thing Lucas had to a home since the war began. As his lesson ended, he wandered back to his quarters, saying complex phrases he was now able to put together. This ship was our salvation. We were outnumbered 100-1 in the battle. My planet is dead, and my people are all but extinct. When he reached the water chamber, he collapsed onto his bed. His mind too full of Soren to effectively process any English books. He glanced at the monitor to find Asha already locked in her pod for the night, an hour earlier than usual. Thoughts of her fled from him as he drifted out of consciousness. No talking ships or celestial events appeared to him during his long slumber, and when he awoke, it was as if he had just deactivated the lights moments ago. He swiped through his watch to kill the alarm that sounded vaguely like an ethereal air raid siren. 1500 meant it was time to start the day, but apparently everyone didn't agree with that. On the monitor, Noah was sleepily crawling out of his pod on cue, but Asha's remained shut. Lucas was half annoyed at her sloth, half concerned with her well-being. Though he'd likely hear an earful from her, he went upstairs to catch her when she came out and attempt to talk her out of her new sleeping quarters. But when he reached the barracks, the pod remained shut. Even Noah was a bit unnerved as he pressed up against the glass with his hands and tried to peer inside from the ground. Lucas didn't know how to open the pod from the outside, but as he was flipping through the half-translated menus, he found something disturbing. A timer. 530816. 530817. 530818. These were hours. She hadn't left the pod in well over a Saurian day. Shit! He cried out, startling Noah. Lucas hurtled over the storage cubes boxing the child in and raced down to the lab where Alpha was soldering a chip. We have a problem, Lucas said frantically. Alpha accompanied him back upstairs where he sifted through the readouts at the front of the pod. The timer reappeared, and Alpha quickly waved it aside as he found the control he was looking for. The manual override caused the door to raise, and a hiss of vaporized nutrients dissipated when the panel came up. Asha was slouched against the back wall as the halo lifted off her head. She was scrawny and pale, and her eyes remained shut. Lucas reached out to touch her arm. When she didn't react, he shook her, calling her name.
"Asha! Asha!" he shouted as he jostled her. "Is she alive?"
"Yes," Alpha said, checking the readouts. Her breathing was shallow, but her chest was rising and falling ever so slightly. Lucas put his hand on her shoulder and shook once more.
"Asha!"
Suddenly her eyes snapped open with a look he'd seen too many times before. She lunged at him, and he was propelled all the way to a pod on the opposite wall. His head cracked the translucent door, and his vision exploded into a brilliant array of stars. Her fingers raced for his eyes, and he barely had time to grab her wrist and wrench her arm away. Lucas's other arm caught her throat instinctively, but he threw her backwards before he crushed her windpipe out of habit. Alpha caught her with his good claw and restrained her against the pod, his 8-foot frame towering over her. The fierceness in her eyes subsided, and she collapsed, sliding down the gelatinous surface behind her. Next to her was Noah, who was bawling at the turn of events. Lucas rubbed the back of his head and pulled his hand away to find it coated in blood.
"What the hell, Asha?"
She looked disoriented.
"But you were... I thought..."
The thought was left unfinished. Alpha spoke next.
"It is clear that prolonged use has adverse effects on human biology. I am deactivating the system for both of your biological signatures."
Asha's wild-eyed look returned.
"No, you can't!"
Lucas threw his arms out in front of him.
"What are you doing sleeping in these things anyway? You and I both know what they do. Why would you want to subject yourself to that?"
Asha sat with her knees folded and her arms crossed and covered in goosebumps.
"Because I want to see him,"
she said coldly.
"See who?"
"Christian. The photo. The young man with the bright eyes and wide smile. Her ring."
"Impossible," Alpha said sternly. "I need to run some tests. Accompany me to the lab."
"No," she yelled,
her raised voice causing both Noah and Alpha to jump. Her eyes weren't wet, but her voice was cracking a bit.
"I haven't seen him yet. It's been mostly bad things, but I know I will. Next time, just one more time. There are so many memories."
Her voice trailed off.
"You can't do this, Asha," Lucas said sternly.
"These memories you experience only serve to degrade your mental condition," Alpha added.
Lucas pressed her.
"I thought you were stronger than this."
That got her to her feet and up in his face. Lucas's head was still throbbing as he braced himself for possible impact. Her green eyes burned with rage. But she turned and stormed out of the room, kicking a formerly welded storage cube out of the way as she went. Chapter 15. After debating what to do with Asha, Lucas and Alpha agreed that keeping her confined was the best solution until she would allow Alpha to run tests on her, or they could effectively force her into compliance. The full extent of the damage to her psyche was unknown, but after the encounter that day, it was clear she was highly unstable. When she fled back into the armory, Alpha locked the door behind her. An hour later, when she tried to leave and found she couldn't, she started yelling all sorts of vile threats and violently threw herself against the door. The problem was that the room they trapped her in happened to be filled with assorted amounts of weaponry, and extracting her was a risk neither of them wanted to take. Alpha set to work synthesizing a non-lethal toxin he would release into the room to knock her out, and afterward she could be analyzed at the lab. The hastily improvised compound would be ready by morning. Lucas had trouble sleeping that night, disheartened by what he'd seen that day. He had felt he was growing closer to Asha, but now that seemed impossible as her mind had been corrupted by her search of a lost loved one. To Lucas, it didn't make her weak to search for Christian, even though that's how she had appeared. It actually made her seem strong. Surely she had to endure night after night of unimaginable horror just for a chance of seeing him again. Lucas, however, had been terrified from the beginning to relive any moments from his former life, good or bad. The disturbing things he'd witnessed in the last few years were scarring, to be sure, but seeing Sonya or Nathan again, feeling like they were still alive the way he'd seen Adam, the thought was too much to bear and was a journey he had been too scared to attempt, even before the psychological effects were made evident. After a few hours of dreamlessness, Lucas awoke. The lights were still off in the water chamber, and there was only the blue glow of the tanks. His eyes were out of focus, but as they adjusted, he felt a presence. Then he saw her. A silhouette stood at the foot of his mattress, and this was no dream. He heard a click, and Asha raised her magnum. He froze. "At last, you bastard." Her voice was calm and cold. "You thought you could hide in Alaska? You didn't think I'd find you here?" The blue light illuminated the metal of the gun. Lucas raised his hand. "What are you talking about? What are you doing?" he said slowly. "Don't act like you don't remember me. How could you forget what you did? Are you really that much of a monster? You betrayed him, killed him in cold blood when he trusted you." Lucas's heart was thundering in his chest. "Asha, I know you, but this isn't Alaska. I didn't kill Christian. I'm Lucas." Her tone remained icy. "So you do remember me. And call yourself whatever you like. It makes no difference. Changing your name and denying your crime doesn't erase what you did." Lucas's eyes darted around the dark room, trying to find a way out. Reason didn't seem to be on the table, as Asha was clearly in an entirely different place. She stepped closer and raised the gun. "Asha, I'm..." With his right arm, he whipped up the floating monitor that showed the view of the barracks. The hologram illuminated her face and showed her vacant eyes in the darkness. She glanced at the sudden apparition, and it was enough to give Lucas the split-second diversion he needed. He propelled himself up off his mattress and tackled her. The magnum went off, sending a deafening echo throughout the chamber, and the pair of them smashed into the wooden desk, knocking it and all its contents loudly to the floor. Lucas went for the gun in her left hand, but her knee found his mended ribs, and the breath was knocked out of him. She whipped her right fist around, catching him in the throat, and breathing went from difficult to impossible. He rolled to his back, gasping for air, and she leapt onto his chest. Bringing the magnum around to his face, he barely had the presence of mind to swat it sideways with his forearm before it fired again. The noise made his ears ring, and he couldn't hear the sounds of the ensuing scuffle. He launched his torso upward and managed to headbutt her cheekbone, which was all he could reach. It stunned her momentarily, and he was able to shove her backward off of him as he scrambled to his feet. With her still on the ground, he swung a kick at her gut and heard the gun clatter to the floor. Wheezing, she searched the darkness for the weapon, but when Lucas came after her with another kick, she was ready. Asha grabbed his leg and twisted, and Lucas felt a surge of pain as something popped near his knee. She released her grip and then sprang to her feet, immediately whirling around to connect a roundhouse kick to Lucas's jaw. Blackness was encroaching on his vision from the pain as he staggered away, and he focused his eyes in time to see her locate the magnum on the ground. He stumbled forward, grabbing her wrist just as she pointed it toward him, and the gun fired again, this time blasting a hole in the water tank behind him, which began to bleed its precious contents out onto the floor. "Asha, please, I don't want to—" She raked her nails across his neck with her free hand, and Lucas was forced to counter with a pair of body blows. He summoned one final burst of strength as he lifted her from her feet, spun her around, and threw her into a nearby water tank, which shattered from the impact. Water exploded out into the metal corridor as untold gallons coated both of them before pouring through the grating below. Something underneath them was apparently generating a large amount of heat, and the water vaporized instantly and steam shot up through the grating, blanketing the room. Asha lay unconscious and soaking wet on the floor of the tank. Lucas fell to his knees in exhaustion, innumerable parts of his body in agony as fresh blood sprang out of injuries the water had just washed. Suddenly the lights came on, and through the steam a familiar-looking shape appeared at the end of the corridor. As Alpha saw what had transpired, Lucas watched him lose his usually calm and collected demeanor.
"No, no, no, what have you done?" he exclaimed as loudly as his translator would let him.
Lucas struggled to catch his breath.
"She escaped. Attacked. I had to."
But Alpha wasn't listening. He sprinted over to the wrecked tanks, one shattered and one losing water rapidly out of a large hole the magnum had blown through it. It was already about two-thirds empty. Alpha raced behind it and came back with a long, wide hose. He sealed it around the hole and dragged the other end around to one of the tanks that was empty but intact. Water began to pour into it, but the vast majority of the second tank's water had seeped into the grating.
The other tank had lost the entirety of its contents mere seconds after Asha went through it. She remained motionless inside. With the second tank secure, Alpha walked over to the ailing Lucas, sitting among his drenched books that littered the floor.
"How did she get out?"
Lucas asked as he shook from a sudden chill that ran through him.
"I am uncertain,"
Alpha said, still scanning the carnage around him.
"She's lost it. She thought she was in Alaska and that I was someone she was trying to kill back on Earth."
"We must go to the lab and attempt to make sense of this destruction,"
Alpha said, exasperated. He walked over to Asha and pulled her out of the broken tank, avoiding any shards that might catch her. He slung her over his back, the way he had when Lucas had knocked her out the first time in the desert, though considerably more of her blood was now streaming down his back.
"Follow me."
Lucas dragged himself upstairs and filled his wounds with the gelatinous fluid Alpha had used to heal them before. The scientist tended to Asha on a nearby table. Her arms and legs were restrained with metal devices, and a hologram of her brain appeared floating above her physical skull. Alpha examined it carefully.
"Prolonged exposure to the... has indeed induced deep psychosis," he said matter-of-factly, like he was looking at an unconscious lab rat.
"Can you bring her back?"
Lucas asked. He winced while the gel hissed closed the claw wounds across his throat. His ears were still ringing from the close proximity gunshots.
"She will require an extended period of treatment and observation. I will keep her here until progress is made."
He attached two nodes to the side of her head. A large bruise was beginning to form on her cheek where it had met Lucas's forehead. Alpha flipped a switch, and the hologram of the brain showed certain sections lighting up colorfully.
"Good response," Alpha said.
"I didn't mess her up too badly, did I?"
Lucas asked. She had lost so much weight, and he'd gained so much muscle. When he'd thrown her through the tank, she felt like she barely had any substance to her at all. But still, she'd put up quite a fight in her primal state, and he'd be seeing some bruises of his own soon enough, which would join his bloody scratches and possibly dislocated kneecap.
"She is injured and unconscious, but stable, and I will keep her sedated until I can repair the brain damage from the..."
"And you're sure you can do that?"
"Better equipment would help, and this is not a medical vessel. Hopefully I can build a few of the tools I am missing. Even our most rudimentary medicine is leagues beyond your homeworld's capabilities."
Lucas didn't think Alpha was being purposefully condescending, but if it meant Asha could be saved, it didn't matter. He was frightened to lose her. A level of attachment to her existed that he wasn't even aware of until she lay mentally and physically broken before him. Lucas didn't sleep much at all the next few nights, and his days were full of distraction. He routinely checked in on Asha in the lab, each time greeted by Alpha, who maintained treatment was in progress as he attempted to try and rewire her brain with an unfamiliar electronic device. She was still sedated, and would be until the procedure was complete. Soon after she was deemed stable, the pair of them searched the armory footage to find that she'd stacked storage cubes up to the ceiling, pried open a loose panel with a blade, and dropped down into the hallway, magnum in hand. Even impenetrable alien locks couldn't contain a crafty, determined, psychotic human. Lucas kept his mind off of Asha by spending more time than ever in the chair. In between Asha's treatments, Alpha had programmed the chips Lucas had asked for. Learning Zalan symbols was straightforward enough, and the intricacies of the controls all around the ship began to reveal themselves to him. Their written language was much easier to comprehend than Sorin, and their 51-character alphabet was ingrained into his mind in only a few days. Words and phrases began to follow soon after, though his learning was limited to written word as audible speech was beyond his biological grasp. He also spent a bit of time with Norwegian, and found it much easier to learn than Zalan or Sorin. The letters were one he was familiar with already, and neural stimulation made retention a breeze.
Unfortunately, the reason he was learning the now-deceased tongue had taken a bit of a beating during his and Asha's brawl. The cannibal chief's journal that he had taken from the mansion surely contained all sorts of intriguing insights into the mind of the man he'd killed, but water had soaked it to a degree where the vast majority of the ink had bled into illegibility. That night, Lucas tried to read a section that had been preserved.
"It's been a week since we cut up the last creature in town. There is no more food, and scouting parties have turned up nothing but water in a month. The creatures were all the sustenance we had left, and now they too are gone. Another large raiding brigade flung themselves at the wall today, thinking we had supplies they could pillage. The men gunned them down quickly. There was talk of hanging their carcasses outside to ward off other invaders. Such ideas repulse me. We are not barbarians like them. Why should we behave as such? With the world torn asunder, we still have a functioning village, a town of friends and allies. Though now that the food is gone, I wonder how long we will remain that way. The ship looms ever present, cleaving the town and the mansion in two. I've been petitioning Alexander that our best hope of survival is opening that ship. Who knows what untold supplies and edible creatures linger within? But after forced entry failed, they now just laugh at my attempts to unlock the vessel with reason. They believe, because of my size, that I am a brute, but they are mistaken. It seems only yesterday I was at university, extolling the virtues of space travel to a sea of eager young faces. How quickly things change. Conscription forced me to fight, for whatever good it did. I remember watching the ship fall in our final stand, but what did it matter? The entire region was decimated. I declared my forced tour of duty over and decided to stay. But now I hunger. Deeply. It's all I think about. It consumes my every waking moment. A week ago we caught Harvald chewing on meat. Red meat. A dead raider. We expelled him from camp immediately, but I fear that such behavior will only increase in frequency. What happens then? What do we become? The rest of the entry became illegible, as did many pages after that. Lucas had to flip far forward to find a section where the Norwegian words were still visible. I killed Alexander today. He gave me no choice. I watched him sacrifice one of the older women, one without purpose, so we may eat. Murdering our own for food? I couldn't allow it. Raiders and wanderers are one thing, a reality I was forced to accept, despite it seeming to spring from my darkest nightmares. But our own citizens? Those we've been protecting all this time? Where does it end? The only thing anyone in this town respects now is pure force. I shoved a spear through his eye in the middle of the town square, and no one said a word. Whether they are now with me out of belief in my cause, or out of fear, I do not know. But I suppose either purpose will suffice. My first order was to send a larger party to head back to the mainland. They found a creature a month ago. Perhaps there is still hope further savagery can be avoided. The taste. It is mentally sickening, but physically pleasant. This is what causes me the most anxiety. This was a line I swore I would not cross. What will we do next in the name of survival? Is this life even worth living? The heat is growing unbearable. The endless clouds look angrier by the day. The ship's door stands there mocking me. I suppose with Alexander gone, the mansion is mine. More time to spend with the door. It is our salvation, I am sure of it. More ruined pages. And Lucas flipped to near the end of the tome where he could read once more. The handwriting was harder to decipher, and it looked like it was written in a panic with shaking hands. There's a conspiracy to kill me, I know it. I see it in Vigar's eyes. Well, his eye. He's the most educated, the most devious. He pretends to be my advisor, but I know the truth. The armor is almost complete. Once it's assembled and active, I will be invincible and immune to treachery. I tested the gun on one of the women yesterday. It cooked her almost instantly, a useful tool. But now the weak are starting to thin out. Their sacrifice serves to keep the rest of us alive. The remaining women grow nervous. After the runaways this week, Olaf suggests we keep them in the church under lock and key. They deserve it. They don't understand the world now. The weak must make way for the strong. If this world is to survive, they must do their part to repopulate, though it seems few will do so willingly. How can they be so blind, so selfish? My son was born today. The ship speaks to me. It tells me he will be a legend. He is strong, healthy. I killed his mother, the pretty one from Oslo. Now she may not produce a rival with another. This angered Henrik, and so I killed him as well. We ate like kings that night. As I look into my child's eyes, I know the world will return to its former glory on the backs of men like him. He is the first of a new generation, a new earth. We will rule the world as gods. The entry was marked 8 months ago. Lucas's mouth hung open as he understood the implication. Noah. Though he did not know how many other children perished in the fire, the probability certainly seemed likely, and the child was big for his age. The mad chief's heir, playing with alien toys in the barracks upstairs. He would never know these things. His life needn't be burdened with a wretched history such as this. The rest of the pages were a jumble of stained words and nonsense phrases as the chief lost his mind at an increasingly rapid pace. Lucas had seen prolonged flesh-eating lead to similar conditions many times. He was shocked at how dramatic the transformation was in this case, however. A reasonable man, even a good one, turned into a monster in such a short stretch of time. Perhaps it was good Earth was dead, if men like that were all that remained. Lucas closed the book and rubbed his jaw. One of his back molars was loose after Asha's kick, and Alpha had nothing for that on board. He was the smartest being Lucas had ever encountered, but human dentistry was not in his skill set. Dimming the lights with a specific wave of his hand, he fell into bed. Days later, he was still jumping at shadows after Asha's nocturnal assault. With Natalie cold and still, he was now sleeping with his sawed-off shotgun under his pillow. He had scoured the armory and found a few stray shells of rubber pellets. Should he have to forcefully deal with another Asha escape and murder attempt, he didn't want to have to blow an actual hole through her chest to stop her, even if she did have it coming at this point. He dreamed in Norwegian. When he saw Noah the next morning, he searched him for signs that might tie him to the chief. Resemblance was hard to gauge. The man had been so hairy he resembled a grizzly bear more than a human. And there was no telling what the mother looked like, and she might explain the fact that he wasn't a full-blown giant, content with being perhaps slightly larger than your average infant. But his eyes, they were the same rich blue as the chief's, which Lucas had seen in the man's final moments. It was true then, a truth that would stay buried forever. Noah had been taking to his chair sessions with great enthusiasm, and the way his face lit up, it was clear the colorful symbols paired with Asha's narration was the highlight of his day. Lucas had taken him to see her the day before. Pawing at her face, he looked forlorn when she didn't respond. Today he was in a much better mood, however, though no magic breakthroughs came when the lesson ended. The invented words he babbled still weren't any from Earth, nor any other planet they knew of. After Lucas put him back in his storage cube-lined playpen, he headed down to the lab for one of his many daily visits. This time he was stunned to enter and see her eyes open, staring straight up at the ceiling. She's awake? Lucas asked cautiously.
No, Alpha replied. She remains unconscious for the moment.
But her eyes, a necessary condition of this phase of the procedure. The effect was unnerving, and Lucas waved his hand over her face. She blinked, but her gaze remained unbroken, looking past him to the lights of the ceiling. She was still wearing the bloodied clothes from the night of their fight and was starting to smell. She's filthy.
It is not of importance.
Maybe not to you, but she shouldn't wake up like this.
Do what you will, Alpha said as he adjusted some controls near the device fixed to her head. Lucas returned with a fresh pair of clothes he found in the armory and was relieved to find her eyes closed. He wasn't entirely sure the navy shirt matched the black pants, but they'd recently been steamed, the closest they could get to washing, and were leagues more sanitary than what she had on now. He swung by his own quarters to grab a worn shirt and a container of water. Back at the lab, he soaked the shirt and started wiping away the crusted blood that coated parts of her body. Alpha had healed her wounds, which included many small cuts from the shattered water reservoir, but the blood remained behind. Lucas undid her restraints and peeled away her odorous clothes, leaving her sports bra and underwear in place, as he already felt strange enough changing her in this state. He quickly wiped down the rest of her body and could now see how much it had truly atrophied. Muscle gave way to skin and bone, and he could count every rib she had. He quickly dressed her in the new shirt and pants he had acquired. Tossing the clothes away, the stench was already dissipating. She looked gaunt, but less like a car accident victim after having been cleaned up. Alpha hadn't even noticed the process and shooed Lucas away to reattach the device to her head. The hologram of her brain reappeared and began pulsating with light. Lucas could decipher a few of the Zalan symbols for a change. He could make out cortex, synapse, and improvement. It sounded promising. Chapter 16. A day later, as he was sitting in the captain's chair, Lucas tore the neural cords from his head when he received a simple message from Alpha over the monitor.
She is awake.
When Lucas arrived out of breath at the lab, he saw Asha still strapped to the table, cursing loudly. As she saw him, she broke her stream of profanities to release a more coherent thought.
Can someone please tell me what the hell is going on?
Alpha looked to Lucas.
Attempt to speak with her. She will not listen to me.
Lucas went to her side. Calm down, Asha, he said forcefully.
Why am I strapped to this thing, and why do I feel like I've been beaten with a sledgehammer?
She paused as she saw Lucas.
And what happened to your face?
Lucas touched his still bruised jaw. This is your handiwork, and the reason you're strapped to the chair. Have you seen yourself lately? Asha looked down at her chest, which was peppered with small white scars that were still healing. No mirrors were present, so she couldn't see the giant bruise covering half her face. Lucas turned to Alpha. Memory loss?
None other than the escape and assault.
What are you two idiots talking about? Let me out of this thing!
Lucas went over to Alpha's workstation and began typing on the virtual Zalan keyboard. Alpha seemed taken aback that Lucas knew what he was doing with the complex interface. A holographic monitor appeared, and Lucas dragged it with his hand and placed it over Asha's head. A video began to play.
You thought you could hide in Alaska? You thought I wouldn't find you here?
Asha looked stunned.
When did... You killed him in cold blood. I don't remember. He trusted you.
The fight began, and Asha looked horrified as she watched herself attempt to blow Lucas's brain out with her magnum on screen. After she was thrown through the tank, Lucas stopped playback. What's the last thing you can remember? Asha was no longer heated and responded quietly.
The last few days have been blurry.
The last 8 days you've been on this table. Alpha's been repairing the damage the pod did to your brain.
God, I had no idea. It all just blended together. And I don't remember any of that, she said, motioning to the monitor by raising her chin, her only free body part. But everything else, your past, the ship, me, Alpha, Noah, you can recall all of it?
Yeah. Where is the little guy anyway?
Probably chewing on a very important piece of machinery, Alpha said in a huff.
He's been by to visit. He should be happy to see you. Asha looked down at her body.
What the hell am I wearing?
It took about 6 more hours of tests before Alpha finally agreed to let Asha out of the restraints. It would be even longer until she was allowed back in the armory, and Lucas was relocating her personal effects to a detention cell on the lower level. She wouldn't be imprisoned there, but the door to the armory would no longer respond to her biological signature. The ceiling panels had been sealed as well, nor were the pods in the barracks. All had been deactivated completely, save Noah's, as the boy had been thriving in the device. Asha put up a fight about not having access to her beloved, well-polished arsenal, but when shown the assault video once more, she reluctantly conceded the point. Lucas hunted through the armory for any scraps of her belongings he had missed. He discovered a few books lodged in the cracks of some ammo boxes, and then found himself staring at the locked container once more. He thumbed through the display and found that he could now read some of the words. Danger and contaminant were two that stood out. As he attempted to open it, the word for no appeared in bright, flashing red. Well, that's straight to the point. But now he thought better of opening it at all, with all those descriptors attached. When Alpha finally cleared Asha to move freely about the cabin, she came down to see her new quarters where Lucas was still attempting to arrange her belongings throughout the small room. To avoid further anger, he'd even brought down her treasured magnum, which rested on the center of the round table where she usually sat to read. Bullets, of course, were nowhere to be found. "So this is what I've bought myself, huh?" she said as she glanced quickly around her new tiny living space, once originally meant to house Noah before he took to the barracks instead. "Hey, this is generous. If our roles were reversed, I'm pretty sure you'd have me living on the outside of the ship." Asha paused.
"That's probably true."
She sunk down against the wall and came to a rest on her mattress.
"How do you feel?"
Lucas asked.
"Fine. Really. Not insane. Though I suppose that's what an insane person would say."
"To be fair, I thought you were crazy before this entire thing." She scoffed, shrugging her shoulders. "Look around. Don't you think you'd have to be a little bit crazy to be where we are right now?" Lucas sat on the floor as well, leaning up against the console that was meant to activate the light barrier that barricaded the cell. The scene reminded him a bit of their first conversation on the ship months ago, back when she was still just the nameless siren who left him to die in Georgia.
"You know, you don't look anything like him," Asha said suddenly, looking Lucas over as he sat across from her. "Like who?" He called himself Roy, but who knows if that was really his name? "Who was he, and who was Christian?"
Lucas pressed. She tilted her head back against the wall and let out a long sigh.
"Christian and I were engaged. He was my favorite photographer. Could make me look better in his shoots than anyone else in the industry. Once we were together, I found he could make me not only a better model, but a better person as well."
She paused.
"Our wedding was set for a week after the first ship showed up. As you might imagine, that really threw a wrench in things, and we were desperately trying to get back to our families in California after being on set in North Carolina."
Asha hadn't started out her journey all that far from him, Lucas realized.
"When the war began, we were lucky to escape Charlotte alive. The city was wiped out almost immediately. Soon after, we joined a group, as most everyone did. Ours was about 30 deep and led by Roy. He was short, stocky, and balding, someone you would never take for an authority figure. I still to this day don't know what he did in his old life. He wasn't military or police, but he spoke loudly and with confidence, and that's all it took to be a leader in those days."
Lucas disagreed with that statement, as he had been rather soft-spoken as his own group's leader. But he supposed at the time he did exude a sense of purpose. He remained silent and let Asha continue.
"Things got bad. People died. Roy wasn't so confident anymore. The West Coast was supposed to be annihilated, and he swore Alaska would be our salvation as the temperature rose each day under the red sky. But he was starting to lose it."
Asha walked over to the table and picked up the magnum, checking to make sure it was indeed as empty as it felt. No snide remark followed.
"One night, when I was in the woods attempting to find usable firewood, he came after me. Told me he deserved me for all he'd gotten us through, for keeping us alive. He clawed at me and was stronger than he looked, because he'd been hoarding much of the food for himself. I was weak and couldn't fight, so I screamed. Part of me wonders what might have happened if I hadn't."
She stared down at the pistol.
"It happened so fast. Christian came running and drew his gun immediately, his father's revolver that had saved our lives many times in the past few weeks from humans and creatures alike. But Roy was quick, and without even rebuckling his pants, drew his own pistol. Both fired. Roy's shoulder blew apart. Christian took a round in the chest. She stopped for a long time, and neither of them said anything. The Magnum's significance was clear now. I picked up Roy's gun from the forest floor. There was terror in his eyes as he looked down the barrel. But I couldn't pull the trigger. It was frozen. Her eye was frozen. He ran away, clutching his wound. I heard him yelling to the rest of the camp that he'd been attacked by bandits, and Christian and I were already dead. She set the gun back down. But we weren't. Christian lived for a full day afterward. I couldn't move him, and the medical supplies were gone when the rest of the camp fled from the imaginary invaders, toward Alaska. Christian didn't have any last words because he couldn't speak. His eyes pleaded with me as he kept motioning to his gun with the only arm he could move. I told him I couldn't. No way. His killer got away, and he suffered until the end because I was weak. After that day, I was never weak again.
Lucas sat in silence.
I'm sorry, he finally said.
It was the best he could come up with.
For what?
For how you lost him. When my own group was slaughtered, it was horrific. But I didn't know them, not really. I lost my family in an instant, thousands of miles away, and I didn't even know it. What you went through, I can see how it would change you. I can see why you'd follow a man like that to Alaska. She sighed.
I never saw him again, except in the pod. I had to relive that night, that entire next day. No first date memories, no New Year's Eve proposal. The pod wouldn't give me what I wanted, but I realize now, even if I did go back to one of those moments, it wouldn't last. I'd wake up and Christian would still be dead, and I'd still be on a spaceship a billion miles from home. The future is all we have now.
He'd be happy you survived.
I suppose he would.
So what do you live for now, if not revenge?
I don't know. I guess I have to figure that out. What about you?
Lucas thought of a response, but was interrupted by a large 8-foot frame at the door. Alpha was standing there with Noah seated in his good claw. It was the first time Lucas could remember seeing Alpha hold him, even if he was handling him like a piece of fruit.
The child would have words, he said.
As Noah saw Asha, his eyes lit up and he waved his arms in her direction. Then suddenly,
Asha!
Lucas's mouth hung open.
Asha!
She broke at last, and tears streamed down her face as she took Noah into her arms. Lucas looked at the strange band before him. The woman, the child, the alien. He thought of what Adam had said to him in his final pod experience.
It's not only about survival.
You need something to be fighting for. He would fight for them.
Chapter 17. Lucas slept soundly for the first night in a week, plagued by no further visions of shadowy figures near his bed. Asha truly seemed healed, and it was miraculous what Alpha had done over the past week with her mind. Had she undergone such a breakdown on Earth, surely she would have ended up institutionalized and doped up indefinitely, but here, a week later, she appeared to be entirely cured. It really was a shame the Zollins hadn't come in peace. Who knew how Earth might have changed as a result of such scientific breakthroughs? But it was a pointless thought now, as it was clear the planet would never recover from its mortal injuries, and no amount of technology would change that. As he prepared for his morning workout, a voice rang out through the corridor.
Crew to command.
Alpha rarely summoned them together anymore, and it had to be something rather important to issue such an order this early in the morning. Lucas hastily dressed and got to the CIC, where Asha and Alpha were already waiting. Asha looked leagues better than she had even yesterday. Color had returned to her face, and it seemed she'd gained back 5 pounds overnight.
Lucas wondered if Alpha had prescribed her additional nutrients that would return her to a healthy weight. She glanced at Lucas and gave a half-smile that caught him off guard. Perhaps recent events had brought them closer than he realized. Alpha derailed his train of thought.
"We have an issue that I have avoided discussing while Asha's recovery was taking place, but now it is a subject we can avoid no longer."
The holotable showed the Milky Way with several points of interest marked.
"What kind of issue?" Lucas asked.
Alpha moved his claw, and the galaxy map turned into a video of their brawl in the water chamber.
"You may have been too incapacitated to notice, but your altercation destroyed a large amount of our water supply."
The video showed Asha being thrown through the container and the water turning into steam instantaneously once it poured through the grating. The tank across from it was leaking a large amount of water itself, pierced by a shot from the Magnum.
"I noticed. Sorry, but I didn't really have a choice."
Alpha scoffed.
"I believe you could have handled the situation in a way that didn't involve the destruction of 7% of our fuel, but apologies are not required. We must simply deal with the task at hand."
Asha spoke, not bothering to apologize for her role in the fight. "What task at hand? Is 7% really that much?"
"Simply put, yes. I was already a bit concerned we may fall short of our final destination as we burn through our fuel supply at an increased pace with the core. But even with those consumption rates, there was an 87% probability we would reach our final destination."
"And now?" Lucas asked.
"There is a 0% chance. 7% of our water supply tipped the balance of the calculations, and even if we make it 96.738% of the way to our destination, as I predict, in a best-case scenario, we will still be several trillion miles out with no means of reaching Sora."
The room fell silent. Was their journey over? Had they really come all this way just to die floating in space, running on empty? Alpha read his mind.
"There is a plan to avoid this fate, one I have been developing over the past week, which now needs to be shared with you."
Lucas breathed a sigh of relief. Alpha always had a plan.
"There is a fuel depot in the upcoming system of... It is the midway point between Zala and the colony... and is one of many such depots that have been dispersed as stopovers all around this quadrant of the galaxy."
The map returned, and a section of one of the spiral's arms was highlighted.
"So we can just fuel up and be on our way?" Lucas asked. "It is unfortunately not that simple. Fuel stations are not automated. They are manned by a small crew."
Asha was already thinking ahead.
"And right now you're Zala's most wanted."
"I am likely a high-priority target based on Commander Omicron's personal interest in securing me."
Lucas continued the thought. "And you said any ship that you fly is tagged with your signature." Alpha expanded.
"And their sensors will also pick up Sorin life forms on board the vessel."
"Meaning us. So how the hell is this going to work then?"
Asha asked, arms crossed. Alpha entered some commands, and a stream of Zalan symbols appeared in place of the galaxy. Lucas could pull out a few, but they were moving much too fast for him to process what exactly he was seeing.
"I have been developing an algorithm that will mimic the effects of a solar storm. It will disrupt their sensors without appearing as if they are being purposefully disabled. They will be unable to scan the ship and will not recognize that you are on it or that it has been flagged as being piloted by a traitor."
Lucas shifted and leaned up against the table.
"Sounds easy enough."
"Perhaps, but I do not know how long the system will take to detect the malfeasance, hopefully long enough to allow us to refuel and depart before they are the wiser. If not, we will have larger issues to deal with than a lack of water.
Asha had a suggestion of her own. Why bother with all this? Why can't we just attack the station, take the water, blow it to hell, and leave?
A direct assault would immediately alert the entire fleet to our whereabouts, including Commander Omicron. We will already be losing time on him by making this detour, but if he's alerted quickly enough, he could divert his course and arrive before we are able to escape.
Asha looked annoyed at the suggested absence of violence.